On this episode of the Video Archives podcast, we continue on with part two of our memorial episode for Rick Dalton. Best known by fans for playing Jake Cahill on Bounty Law and Eddie Karpinski in the Fireman trilogy, we move on to discussing Rick's straight-to-video era with three heavy hitters, Blast Fighter, Operation NAMM, and Jungle Raiders. Then, Quentin continues his Q&A with Rick, shedding light on the career choices he made throughout his life and the values that the man held. My name is Gala Avery, and joining us now, here's Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery.
So our next film on the Rick Dalton go-around, again, now these are different now. This is all post-Fireman. So Rick is now a big straight-to-home video action star, especially with the Italian film industry and with Cero H. Santiago in the Philippines. But the Italian films are like, does like two movies with Antonio Margheriti, who directed him in Operation Dynamite. This is Operation NAMM, which is actually very interesting because there's a close-to-homeness about the home video distributor. This is distributed by Imperial Entertainment, which was the video company that when I finally left Video Archives, I started working for a video company called Imperial Entertainment.
Yeah, the Shaw Brothers.
Yeah, the Shaw Brothers, all right. The other Shaw Brothers.
Yeah, the younger Shaw Brothers.
SHA, all right. Sunil, Sundip, and Ash.
Yeah.
And they had a really cool video company. And I worked for them for like 2 years. And basically at the end of the tenure, I was pretty much was in the bookkeeping department working for Sundip, practically as his assistant, even though I wasn't given that title.
Yeah, and you remember I went to school with Ash Shaw.
Yeah, and you went to school with Ash Shaw.
I was like good friends with Ash.
No, my mom was very proud of the fact that I was working in the accounting department of any place because my math was so bad that the idea that I was working in the accounting department of any company was actually a disaster for the, should be a disaster for the company, but I ended up proving myself.
No, when you went to Imperial, when you made that move, from Archives to Imperial, that was a big deal. That was like a legit company, man. That was like
that. Look, it was a big deal, and they wanted people with experience of how mom and pop video stores work. So finally, it was like it was the one job that I was actually overqualified for because I actually knew exactly how video stores worked. I wasn't afraid to get on the telephone with people. I had a big personality, and I understood the video business. And that's why I ended up doing well in the accounting department because my job was stock balancing.
All right.
Yeah, so I called the stores all over to find out, where, you know.
What do you got? What do you need?
What are you sending back?
Yeah.
I watched all the A releases that came out from Imperial Entertainment. And actually, the B releases were actually pretty good. The A releases were pretty mediocre, except for two, both Italian. One was Operation NAMM, which was a really good one. And the other one was the next one to come out would be Demons 2.
Right.
With Lamberto Bava, who we'll get to in a second because he did a Rick Dalton film. Yes,
do you want me to read the back of that?
Yes, by all means.
Of course, it's
blue on
crazy,
blue.
Like blue on pink. Ethan Wayne, hard-hitting son of John Wayne, stars with Donald Pleasance in this explosive saga of shame, the passion, the courage, and the violent savagery of Vietnam. America would rather forget the war. The men that gave their lives in that sweltering hellhole were lucky. Those that came back, the battle-hardened killers, are at best despised, at worst ignored. Four of those embittered Vietnam vets, haunted by the war and tormented by rumors of American POWs left to be tortured, mutilated, and murdered in Vietnamese prison camps, decide to fight their way back to NAMM. Once there, they come face to face with a truth more grotesque than anything they've ever faced in battle. Total abandonment and denial by the country that they fought for and died for.
Is that how it ends?
That's how it ends.
And no Rick Dalton mention. Fuck you.
There's
guys.
No Dalton mention here.
Well, you know what's funny, actually?
There is a picture of him on the back of the box, but it's like him with the other guys.
But you know what's funny is that when you go online, Ethan Wayne is fifth billed now on like the online, and Rick Dalton's number one.
Okay. Yeah, they've got that British actor on the front holding the machine because it's the big Full Metal Jacket
big
moment.
Yeah, Oliver reveal. Tobias.
Yeah, Oliver Tobias.
Pretty much steals the show, actually.
He's great in it. I mean, he looks like a leading man, and he also has that kind of
he's the impersonal machine. You know, he has that. You know, he machine guns the Vietnamese with the same callousness that Clint Eastwood machine guns and Nazis and Where Eagles Dare.
Yeah, I just want to say, I actually think that's a pretty well-written thing, except for the end, it just kind of peters out.
Yeah, No, that was a good
It's a little difficult to read because of the way the type is, but it's actually pretty, like, Imperial did a pretty good job.
I think they're really... Well, the movie's actually pretty political, so but they're leaning into the politics of it even in their description, you know. By a government that despises them. Forgotten by a government that hates them and despises them.
And a population that thinks they're dirt. Population that thinks they're baby killers.
That's basically the rhetoric.
I had been working at Imperial, that baby killer would have found its way.
That would have found it in there.
Blast Fighter, the force of vengeance. They killed his wife, his daughter, his best friend. And they left him with two things, vengeance and the ultimate weapon. Not since First Blood has revenge been so sweet.
So now, okay, so we're talking about all three of these in one big go. We're talking about Operation Nam. Then the other film that we had is from Lamberto Bava, working under his, a tribute to his dad's old pseudonym, John M. Old Jr., which was his father is the great Mario Bava, and his English pseudonym was John M. Old.
Which is just as bad as John M. Old Jr.
No, John M. Old Jr. John M. Old Jr. wins. It's like John M. Old Jr.
Yeah, no. She's right. Okay, so the movie's called Blast Fighter, and it pits,
1984.
Yeah, in 1984, and it pits Rick Dalton opposite George Eastman, who's sort of the Italian, who's a really good Italian actor, sort of the Italian William Smith. And it says, Rick Dalton, 14 Fist McCluskey, stars as Jake Tiger Sharp.
This sounds like Italian written all over
Roger thought for the first half of the movie that his name was Tiger Sharp.
They keep calling him Tiger, and then everybody's like, hey, Tiger Sharp, come here. Tiger Sharp, come here.
It's his name, Tiger Sharp.
Full disclosure, I thought that as well.
I think it's funny. I'm not laughing at you guys. That was a funny thing to say. Dalton stars as Jake Tiger Sharp, a tough ex-New York cop just released after spending the last 10 years in prison for slaying his wife's killer. This thrilling action and adventure drama is the true story of a man faced with the torturous test of human will. Following his incarceration, Jake decides to start life anew and return to his boyhood home in the mountains. But even there, he has a hard time as the locals don't take kindly to the new loner. Quote unquote. All Jake wants to do is forget his violent past and begin again. One day, a young girl appears at Jake's cabin. It's his daughter, Connie, who he hasn't seen since she was 8. After a soul-searching by both, they realize there is still a strong bond of love between them. But fate intervenes when the local toughs kidnap Connie after attempting to rape her. Jake rescues her, but in their effort to escape, Connie is shot and dies in her father's arms. That doesn't fucking happen.
No, that happens.
It does. It's just they shouldn't be saying it.
Because she does die. She gets when he gets shot in the shoulder after they make the deal.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's at the very, very end.
Yeah, so they're telling the whole story.
They're making it sound like it happens like in the first 40 minutes, and then the rest of it is him getting revenge. All the hatred, violence, and vengeance Jake once fought to suppress now cannot be denied. Tiger must have total revenge. They should have known not to mess with him. Now, the Blast Fighter is back. Okay, that was a terrible description in the last quarter of it.
Of what is actually a great, energetic, fun film.
And not only that, they obviously shot it exactly where Deliverance was shot.
Yes.
And they get a tremendous amount of visual possibilities out of it. Lamberto Bava does a great job shooting the film. But also, and this is what Rick is so good at, he's really, really, he's such a cool Western archetype that it's very easy to make a modern day Western with him. You know, he really gets the modern day aspect of it across. And one of the things that's really cool about the movie is there's this whole aspect that is very similar to one of my favorite John Sturges Westerns, which is Last Train from Gun Hill with Kurt Douglas and Anthony Quinn. Because in this movie, what's going on is the local bad element is the shitty punk younger brother of George Eastman, who's like the local lumber baron. He's like Paul Newman in Sometimes the Great Notion.
Like childhood friends with Rick.
Yeah, he's childhood friends with Rick. They were buddies together when they were kids.
And he's responsible for the guy's limp. Like, George Eastman has a limp.
Yeah,
That Rick
they
is
got
responsible
in a fight,
for.
Like
yeah.
when they were younger. Yeah.
And there was always like who was the toughest, who was the best, and everything. But they really respected each other, and he's the big man in town.
Yeah.
And his brother's the bad element. They're just wantingly just killing animals like crazy, and they're selling him to
there's nothing worse than a movie where they're just killing animals, right? However, the fact that they show that these guys, these assholes, these kind of like, they're not hillbillies exactly. They look more like a bunch of frat guys that are going crazy in the woods.
No, they don't look like hillbillies. No, they look like frat guys. In fact,
to Italians, they might look like hillbillies.
Okay, the guy playing the younger brother of George Eastman, he definitely has a punchable face. So you can enjoy him being a dick, but you wish he was a little bit better of an actor, so he could like you could really hate him. But instead, he's just he's just annoying.
Well, the moment where they're like their car is they've got like a pickup truck,
yeah,
and they've got like bears and pigs and deer of all different kinds, like
and they
gazelles
want them,
and everything.
Some of them are still alive because they want
they're
them
all
alive.
Still barely alive, and they're filling up the back of this thing, and they're putting one on the hood, and they're like. Hey, we got a few minutes more. Let's go get another.
Yeah, exactly. They're taking the big buck that they just shot. They're tying it to the hood. All right.
Well,
there's still a bear in the background.
I've never seen a more grotesque version
of poaching. Hey, we
still
got time for one more.
Yeah,
one more.
They're such grotesque poachers that it's horrible.
And they want them alive because they're selling it to a Chinese herbalist. All right. They're like, no, it's the suffering of the animal that makes the
medicine work.
That makes the shark fin soup so tasty.
So Rick's character has
so Rick's is like appalled by all this shit,
yeah, and he's been away for 8 years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah
he's
yeah.
been
in
prison,
in jail. Yeah,
he's been in
and
jail,
and he comes back, and so he runs afoul of these young guys, and then his old buddy George Eastman is just like, "Look, I'll have him stay away. We'll have him leave you alone. Okay, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. But you know, if you make me choose between, I don't want to. If you make me choose between you and my brother, I'm gonna choose my brother."
Yeah, but George Eastman does such a bad job of keeping his brother away from Rick's character because it's like at every single turn, these guys are just like coming.
No, he has no control. He has no control over his brother.
No, he has zero control over his brother. And his brother does some really terrible, like over the top. Like it's not just like he's a jokester or a trickster. He is like criminal level offense.
Well,
should be in prison.
Rick has a great line. I'm going to mess it up. But it's basically like... anybody who kills animals that much is just a step away from killing a man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
he delivers it great.
That's the old Dalai Lama line. He goes, "If you want to see how a country feels about its people, watch how they treat their animals."
Yeah, and he comes back, and even though, like, hey, look, they're not going to bother you anymore, and they're going to leave you alone and everything, he's still frustrated because he's like, it's clearing out the forest. They're like killing everything.
And then what ends up
happening?
He's
just freaking out. He hates the world he's entered into.
They end up having a violent confrontation between him and his daughter and George Eastman's brother and his stupid idiot. All right. And the stupid idiots end up accidentally killing a couple of the friends of Rick's daughter.
Yeah. And one of them played by
Michael Suave.
Yeah.
Right?
De La Morte de la Mora.
Yeah. And Stage Fright and the church. So they end up killing these guys. So now they have to kill Rick and they have to kill his daughter or else they're going to turn state's evidence. You know, they'll report him to the cops. So the setup is this, is that once they get into town, they'll be safe because they'll tell people what happened and that's it.
Yeah, the sheriff will totally believe them. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the thing is, but they're far away from town. So so if they can track them down and kill them in the forest, they can stop all this from happening. And so they bring George Eastman into it. And so he has a whole lumberyard full of workers there. And so now everybody's combing the forest, trying to kill Rick and his daughter before they get to town. That's a great fucking premise for a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some skimpy staging aside, they do a really good job with it.
Well, as I was watching it, I suddenly started realizing, oh, my God, this is like if Quentin were to produce Deliverance, this is what it would turn into.
Maybe.
It was actually shot in Clayton, Georgia. I looked it up. Both films are shot in Clayton, Georgia. And so after Deliverance, which was 1972, so it's a little bit later, these guys return and they're shooting in Clayton, Georgia, basically at all the exact same locations that are in Deliverance. Yeah. The river. They even hop into a canoe at one point and go down the river.
Well, like we were saying, in Deliverance. even the his house that...
it's the same house.
It's the same house. It looks like the same house.
And Billy Redden, the banjo kid there. This is his second film. This is the movie. They dug that kid. They were like, hey, find that banjo kid. We want him in it. And he makes an appearance in this. He's also in the Tim Burton movie, Big Fish.
Yeah, but we recognize him as soon as he showed up.
And the minute it was there, I was like, okay, we're in the world of Deliverance.
Yeah.
And I think you said, well, this is adjacent to Deliverance.
Yeah, it's adjacent to
Deliverance. And it is. It's definitely adjacent to Deliverance.
Deep inside the hidden rainforests of Malaysia lies the famed Ruby of Doom. Protected by savage tribal warriors, the stone has never been captured. But Duke Howard is ready for anything. Their search for the ruby wasn't easy. Getting out might be impossible.
No! Holy shit!
Trapped. Surrounded. Outnumbered.
You don't think this is the end, do you?
Their biggest adventure could be their last.
We are here, Johnny.
Rick Dalton, Lee Van Cleef, The Jungle Raiders. The adventure of their lives and yours, Jungle Raiders.
The third on our Italian exploitation, straight-to-video Rick timeline, is a... Raiders of the Lost. Well, first we started watching it thinking it was a Raiders of the Lost Ark ripoff, and it sort of is. But as time went on, it became more obvious that it was more of a Romancing the Stone
ripoff.
All right, it's called Jungle Raiders, and it has Rick, and then also a special guest starring Lee Van Cleef in it, and it's for Antonio Margheriti, or who we did Operation Dynamite with back in the day. I'm going to let Gala read the back of the box.
I get to read the back of the box. Woo!
They sought a priceless ruby. They found the adventure of a lifetime. Deep in the heart of a steaming tropical rainforest lies hidden the legendary Ruby of Gloom. To behold its hypnotic brilliance, three men and a woman are willing to give their lives, and a sinister force is just as willing to take them. Put on your pith helmet and sharpen your machete, because you're about to experience a cinematic adventure somewhere in the mysterious jungles of Malaysia. Rick Dalton stars as his adventurer Duke Howard, also known as Captain Yankee, who is hired by beautiful museum curator Yanez, Marina Costa, to locate the famed ruby. The curse that surrounds the sacred gem seems to work its power as Duke and Yanez face hair-raising perils in the darkness of endless caverns and across an incredible lake of fire, pursued by the ruthless Borneo pirates. Hang on for a whirlwind journey of thrills and spills that would make Indiana Jones dizzy. Lee Van Cleef also stars in this story brimming with romance, sensational stunts, beautiful photography, and just the right touch of lighthearted humor. From its surprising opening sequence to the final explosive frames, Jungle Raiders brings back the good old days of edge-off-the-seat entertainment. Feels like I wrote that back of the box.
You know, I'm really glad they mentioned the explosive opening sequence.
Yeah, I
because
know,
that
yeah.
opening sequence is so good and such a great little twist to it.
It's
I don't want to give it away.
No,
but,
I know. Yeah, no, you can't give that away. And it's just,
I also
it's
just
too
wanna,
good.
I also
it's
just want to mention this box.
Oh yeah, the MGM box
with
is
it,
fucking
like,
amazing.
It, like,
yeah,
it looks
look
like
at this
it's
great
ripping
box.
The
yeah. I didn't see this box the other day, and so wow.
Yeah, I love these.
It's like a beautiful. Like fold open
the book boxes.
Yeah, the
well,
book
box. look, all three from like all legit companies.
It's got a great logo.
You got the MGM UA box for Jungle Raiders. We've got the hard plastic Imperial Entertainment box for Operation Nam. We've got the Vestron video box for Blast Fighter.
Yeah, and they're using that kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark typeface for their little.
No, but
logo.
But Gala even pointed out something cool. It has the fly posting poster
yeah,
like
it's
like
ripped.
In Spain or something, like it's been rotting off the wall. Okay, so now here's a really interesting thing. One, I liked Rick in all three of the movies. I think Jungle Raiders was the best made of the three. I think Blast Fighter was the most unique and had the most possibility of being like the strongest standalone movie. It's well done by Lamberto Bava, but it's still lacking a little bit, but I still really, really like it. Having said all that, Operation Nam to me was the most hardest hitting of as a movie.
Well, that
from beginning to end. Well, the ending is so good.
That bleak, amazing ending.
And yeah. It's not just one scene at the end. It's like the last 15 minutes.
It's like, it's every dramatic reveal of the last 15 minutes is just this bitter pill.
With that incredible final shot.
Yeah. This bitter, cynical pill that you're fed throughout the whole film.
I think actually, like, the movie really picks up actually where it shows on the poster.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I think, the moment where the movie kind of turns a little bit.
Okay, but, you know, I would also go so far as to say that, look, having seen all three of the Missing in Action movies, having seen Uncommon Valor, having seen other ripoffs of that, let's go back and bring the guys back kind of film, I like the first half of Operation Nam better than all of them put together. Mm. They all, there's a fun quality that they're all buddies. And that they're all in different points of their lives. You know, the way it starts off, Rick is the rich one. He stayed in Vietnam.
Married a rich woman.
He married a rich woman, and they have a big import.
Like, she has like a bra company or something. Yeah. Some kind of crazy company.
Something
female that he would have nothing to do with naturally.
Yeah, exactly.
She created this company. And
she ended up like owning Sears.
Basically, she started working there, and then she made enough money where she bought the entire building.
Next thing you know, she was building factories.
Yeah. So he's like the rich kept guy. Mm-hmm. All right. So he has all this money. And then another one of them kind of like lives on the street. Yeah. All right. That's the John
Well, they're all
Strata
kind of
character.
Shabby because they all come to the wedding of his daughter.
Yeah.
And they're all hanging out. And his daughter. And
then Ethan Wayne is like a stud. He just travels from town to town. He sleeps with women. He's kept by a woman until he's had enough.
Yeah.
And then Oliver Tobias just pretends he's crazy. All right. So he doesn't have to pay taxes and lives in an insane asylum.
It's free rent. I get free food.
I don't have to pay taxes. and then they all decide to go back to Vietnam and save these group of guys that they heard are still being held down there.
And this was like a real issue at this time when this was made. I mean,
this was talked about a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
And as a result of that, there were all these movies that were made suddenly about Vietnam vets that had not yet returned home.
They did a good job of making it like better than I think Uncommon Valor did. They did a good job of making it like a bunch of guys on a mission movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They're all very distinct.
Yeah, and there was something kind of fun about the idea that they're all buddies and they're like doing it again. And then, like, in the second half, the mission itself is just fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's incredibly violent. You can't believe how shitty it goes.
Everything goes wrong.
Everything really
gets super cynical as a result. Mm-hmm. And kind of realistic, I think, in a way.
Well, here's the thing. Like I said, like, Jungle Raiders is the better movie. Blast Fighter has the better premise. All three movies are directed pretty well. But Operation Nam is the one that I found myself thinking about more after the movie was over.
You know, I'll agree with that, but Jungle Raiders, a.k.a. Captain Yankee, has something that Operation Nam does not have. Mm-hmm. It's the snake.
It does have the snake. Yeah. It has the cobra.
Okay, you're
also,
right.
I just say really
quick. Cobra is amazing. And Cobra Kid, that little kid.
The little kid with the cobra. Yeah. I love the snake story. It was really, like, unexpected and great. Yeah. Also, Blast Fighter and Jungle Raiders both have a character named Tiger.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Because the lead in Blast Fighter is Tiger, and then the lead villain.
Oh, my God.
And
that guy's great.
The lead villain is...
He's amazing.
If anybody can give James Olsen a run for his money for Best Supporting Actor, it's Tiger the villain in Jungle Raiders.
Yeah, Tiger is great. So those are, like, the two things that I don't think the other movies had, because those were, like the fun, sparkly
parts. Well, I will also add a few things to it.
As will I.
Jungle Raiders obviously has the bigger... budget. I mean, Antonio Margheriti had been doing a lot of movies by this point in time. And this is like a bigger budget one from him than I was expecting, frankly, to tell you the truth. And it has a very impressive scale. And there's an impressive scale of model work.
The model work is fantastic.
Oh my, it's so good.
And the
good.
Integration, all the car stunts that they do with models.
I almost forgot about the model work because it's so good.
Yeah, and actually, you know, his model work is not normally this good, and he was known for doing good models, but it doesn't usually bear a candle to insert a Honda. But This is some of his best model work I've ever seen. It really is some of his best work.
It's like his trademark, this kind of integrating models with.
But I've seen a lot of his model work. This is especially high caliber for a Margheriti movie. This is especially high caliber.
And also, let's really talk like really quickly about the flamethrower in this. Because Rick did the Fireman, and he did the Fireman 2, and then he's just about to do, actually, the Fireman 3 comes out the same year as Jungle Raiders. And there's a flamethrower in this.
There's a flamethrower in Jungle Raiders, yes. And no, Rick doesn't.
Yeah,
use
I was
it.
Like, how could all the people who should be picking that flamethrower? He's the one guy that in the entire movie who doesn't use the flamethrower.
It suggests that they wrote in a flamethrower for Rick. As well, that's your thing, and he goes like, "Nah, I'm tired of doing the flamethrower thing," you know. And I think he might have had a priority thing about, like, he's not going to do the flamethrower unless it's for the fireman.
Well, yeah, because the fireman's coming out, like, literally.
And that's his baby.
That's his baby.
Also, I just want to say that what I really liked about Rick in Jungle Raiders in particular, you see him playing it, like for comedy.
He's
great. It turns out he's great
he's
doing comedy. He's very, very funny.
I think it's entirely possible that Rick really enjoyed this script. All right. Because I think he gets a sense of humor in it.
Yeah.
I got the impression that Rick actually liked Jungle Raiders. And it looks like he's having a good time making this movie.
And there's one thing that fails for me in Jungle Raiders, which also I have kind of the same issue in Blast Fighter a little bit. But like, okay, the love connection in Jungle Raiders, I'm sorry, it's terrible. There is zero.
She's awful.
Marina Costa, I'm sorry, is not going to be my pick for best actress.
She's terrible.
They have zero chemistry, so much to the point where they have to use a snake love story to try to make you think like, oh, the two snakes are going away. Just like you guys.
But that was I loved that, though. I loved the snake love story.
Well, the snake love story at the end was pretty fucking great.
Snake love story.
Just when you think the snake arc is done. All right. No. They know what they got a winner here.
So, but then the little kid is like, oh, wait, they're in love just like you guys. And it's like, no, not just like them. Just leave the snakes out of it.
So,
okay, I would say, I agree with you, but okay. And yes, Valerie Blake, who plays Rick's daughter in Blast Fighter, I don't care for her that much either. She's so drastically better than the girl in Jungle Raiders that she only rises by comparison.
Now, Quentin, let me ask. Valentina Forte, who plays Connie, his daughter in Blast Fighter, and Marina Costa, who plays his love interest in Jungle Raiders. They're both Italians.
Yes,
And so did Rick speak Italian?
Does he speak Italian? Well, he's worked in Italy for many years, and he's been married to Francesca Cappucci for over 30 years. So I'm sure he knows a little bit of Italian. And by the way, we need to do a Francesca Cappucci movie on one of these shows because she's fantastic.
Rick probably speaks as much as Eli speaks. Eli Roth.
Yeah.
Married to an Italian.
Okay, yeah,
and actually, Eli can figure it all out.
Eli is pretty
fluent.
Yeah, he's
as fluent as he has to be.
Dad, it's like you when you have to settle a bill or like pay a taxi in another country.
That's my thing. If I'm in a taxi in France, suddenly my French is perfect.
And look, we don't want to spoil it, but the opening 20 minutes of Jungle Raiders is one of the more enjoyable opening 20 minutes of something that we've seen.
Well, they also throw your expectations because you're watching it and you're like, wow, this is like Raiders, like they're doing a little Raiders thing. And then suddenly they one up Raiders.
Yeah. They do. Yeah.
And it's like, wow. Like they actually,
and we can't say anything more without giving it away.
I don't want to say anything more. I just want to say that it was like a wow moment.
It does kind of, I mean, that twist is good enough to be in the first movie.
Yeah.
But the one thing, though, about a lot of these tapes that we watch is that they have a really good opening like that, and then they just, like, peter out and, like, get worse as they go.
Not the case with Operation Nam.
It's not the case with Operation Nam, and it's not the case with Jungle Raiders, and it's not the case with Blast Fighter.
I ended up picking three really good, because I hadn't seen Jungle Raiders. We had to experience that ourselves. But I ended up picking three pretty goddamn good.
They all have good openings that hook you. I think Jungle Raiders is the best of the openings, but none of them peter out. None of them get bad. I was actually surprised. I was expecting one of them to get kind of bad.
And frankly, to tell you the truth, if you see a little bit of risibility in what I'm saying is, you know, I'm used to taking, you know, Antonio Margheriti a little bit for granted. Mm-hmm. All right. He's not in the same category as Corbucci. He's not the same category as Enzo G. Castorelli. This is one of the best directed movies, especially of the latter part of his career, that he ever did. I mean, it's really, really well done. The action sequences look like they're done by a true old pro.
Yeah.
And in the best sense of the word. I mean, like, Fleischer could have made this.
Well, and also, they're really spending money.
And that's like a big compliment.
Oh, it's a huge compliment. And they're doing things like they're showing a model of a volcano and then panning over and doing a little bit of a seamless pan. So you see Rick in the foreground. And then they go into that the cavern of fire and lava and everything.
And it's done really well. It's done really well.
And I'm watching it. I'm thinking, this has got to be like a pretty big budget. At least for Margheriti, it's got to be a
big budget.
Yeah,
I guess the best way to say it is, I mean this in the best possible way, it's done well enough.
Yeah.
But I mean that in the best possible way.
Well, yeah, but, you know, they make up for what they don't have in budget by doing things that were, like, even more Temple of Doom, like having that guy's head suddenly come tumbling down.
That's a really good moment. That's a really, really good moment.
Like, and so they would throw those things in, it just took it to another level.
Well, you made a point that you thought it was actually better than Romancing the Stone.
Oh, I definitely think
that. I think so as
well. There's one thing I like in Romancing the Stone better than this is
Kathleen Turner.
Acosta. That's number one. It would be Kathleen Turner because I am in love with Kathleen Turner. Yeah, I mean, the introduction of Michael Douglas's character when he's like defending her and he comes down with that shotgun and he's just kind of a figure hopping out of the jungle. And like ducking and rolling and tumbling. Well, I love that introduction.
Captain Yankee is far closer to the Michael Douglas character in Romancing the Stone than he is Indiana Jones.
Oh yeah, no, he's exactly the Michael Douglas character. But they pull in enough raiders of the Lost Ark to make it fun.
Also, Jungle Raiders has a great supporting cast. I mean, we've mentioned Lee Van Cleef, who, by the way, has that great opening like intro to himself, where he actually like uses his hat to hide himself.
Lee Van Cleef, who's been around long enough, like knows. Oh, you're going to just start on a close-up of me. Well, hold on. Give me a hat. Somebody find me a hat. You put a hat on him, and he tilts it down so it's hiding his face, and he tilts up.
And then there were two.
Like, that's a pro, man. Yeah. That's a pro.
And there were two other standout actors. There's the guy that plays Fizz, who actually shows up in Operation
Alan Collins. Alan Collins. He's in a lot of the Italian stuff.
So
Luciano Pigozzi. Is that his real name, or is Alan Collins his real name?
Alan Collins is the name he goes by in all of his American movies. But
he's great in this. Yeah. And he's also, fun in this.
No, he comes close to not stealing the show, but he's like a really strong supporting, like the Ernest Borgnine character.
Yeah, but he and Rick go really well together.
They go great together.
They're a great comedy team together.
They are a good comedy team.
And then also the guy with the really high cheekbones, who's playing kind of like the leader of like the Malaysians who are like
the guy you like.
The guy with the
Elvis hair cheekbones.
Oh, I love that guy. The guy with the big, the big gigantic hair.
He's like the leader of all the Malaysians.
Just walking around he's walking around like he's Yul Brynner.
He's always a 10. All right. He's never even at 9. He's always a 10.
His storyline.
And then he'll kill somebody. Bam.
His storyline is so great, though, because he just wants to get rid of the white people.
Yeah.
That's literally his motivation is white people get off my island chain.
Yeah.
That's literally what it is. And he goes for it.
He's awesome in the film.
And when like his factory gets blown up, he's like, I don't care, we'll build another one. And then he like goes and he's like, I'll get out of my island, I'm gonna go build another factory.
He doesn't face him at all. He's great.
It's gonna be between him and Oliver Tobias
and James Olsen.
That's a hard choice for best supporting actor. And now I go to part three of the Q&A with Rick Dalton. And then I ask him, because he'd said something earlier, and he mentioned the incident with the hippies that happened in 69. Mm. So since he mentioned it, I brought it up. Look, so you mentioned what happened to your house with those intruders. So three hippies showed up tripping fucking balls to murder you? That's what they said. Why? Bummer trip? Who fucking knows? And you and a friend fought them off? Well, the friend was Cliff, my stunt double, and that World War II hero I'd mentioned. We didn't just fight him off. Fucking made mincemeat out of those weirdos. goddamn hippie sure picked the wrong fucking house that night. So you never learned why they chose your house?
Nope.
So now I want to bring up one of my favorite movies of yours. It's directed by one of my very favorite directors, director of Django, Sergio Corbucci. The film was your it was the first of your spaghetti westerns, Nebraska Jim. And I got to tell you, I fucking love Nebraska Jim. It's almost impossible to see the English language dub of that movie these days. But I saw it when it came out at the drive-in with my parents, and I still remember it. Well, it was definitely the best of my Italian movies. By a lot, frankly. Well, frankly, I like all the Italian films you did in the 60s. And I also like the Lamberto Fava film you did in the 80s, Blast Fighter, which was sort of like a modern-day reworking of John Sturges' The Last Train to Gun Hill. Well, that one was by far the best of the ones I did in the 80s, though that isn't the highest bar. Okay, full disclosure, I also really dig Enzo G. Cassarelli's Great White. Okay, now you're just taking the piss out of me. Nobody could like that movie. I like Italian exploitation flicks. They're not in a so bad they're good kind of way, but well, let's talk about Corbucci. Well, Nebraska Jim was definitely the class act of the first group of Italian movies I made. And Sergio, who I loved, was the class act of the directors. But before I got it, I almost lost it. I'm having dinner with Sergio and his wife, Nori. And I think he's Sergio Leone. So I'm congratulating him on the terrific performance he got out of Eastwood. Ouch. How did that go over? It definitely wasn't my finest moment. But Nori, bless her heart, took me off the hook. She said, hey, all these Sergios, it's confusing. Then Corbucci laughed and said, hey, he's Sergio Fazzo. I'm Sergio Nazzofazzo. But Sergio could tell I didn't really vibe with this whole Italian Western thing. I mean, what the fuck do I know? I grew up watching Hopalong Cassidy. But I told him, so what if I don't understand them? I'm not a film critic. I'm an actor. Just go to playing cowboys. I told Sergio, put me on a horse, put a cowboy hat on my head, put a cool gun in my hand, and Sergio, you'll dig my Nebraska Jim. And he responded to that? You bet he did. But what he really responded to was when I told him, Sergio, I don't have to like spaghetti westerns to be good in them. I don't even have to like acting to be good at it. I like westerns. I always have. When I was a little boy and I watched westerns, I wanted to be in those westerns. And then I grew up and I was. I like riding horses. I like doing love scenes. I like fucking girls on the set. I like wearing cowboy hats. Wearing cowboy clothes, shooting guns. I don't like reading scripts. I don't like learning lines. I don't like getting up in the morning. I don't like to have to spend all day on a set. And I don't necessarily like acting. In fact, I think it's an unmasculine way to make a living. It's a cunt's job. But I'm fucking good at it. And I proceeded to badmouth all the other guys he was considering. Who else was he considering? Well, he had met with three guys before me, Robert Fuller, Gary Lockwood, and Ty Harden. I told him, if you think Bob Fuller is going to do better than me, then cast him. Now, Bob's a great guy, but he's all voice. But if you're dubbing him into Italian, so what? Shit, his voice is 8% of his personality. Without his voice, what the fuck is he? He's just some fucking guy with black hair. Gary Lockwood? Did you see 2001? Fucking computer acted him off the screen. Ty Harden? I told him, you know what we used to call Ty Harden on the lot? Hardly trying. Now, I don't normally do that. It's kind of a bastard thing to do. But Nebraska Jim was a bastard, and I thought Sergio would appreciate it. By the time we finished that sake bottle, I had the part. I'm proud to have worked with Sergio Corbucci, though at the time I had too much snot in my nose to appreciate it as I should have. Well, that's very nice to hear. Another film you did during that first group of European films was an Italian-Spanish co-production, Red Blood, Red Skin. And I think after Nebraska Jim and Tanner, that's my favorite of your westerns. Yeah, that film wasn't bad. And I dug working with Telly. And Franny, his wife Francesca Capucci, had a good part in that too. She looked hot as hell in that cute little buckskin number. But that film also brought an end to my European movie career for about 15 years. After that film, I knew I needed to go back home. What do you mean? As I said, I didn't get the whole idea of Italian or Spanish Westerns. But like Bill Whitney when it came to Peckinpah, basically it was because I was an old dog and they were a new trick. Ultimately, my rejection of them was I didn't understand them. And I rejected what I couldn't comprehend. Now, I see my rejection was just a misunderstanding, combined with xenophobia. But once I started making them, one thing I didn't like, and I was right about, was the way they treated the horses. because they treated the horses like shit on all the Italian films I did. But the way they treated them in Spain, I couldn't abide. Do you know what a running W is? No. Well, it's a positive thing. A director like you doesn't even know what a running W is. Part of the reason you don't know what it is because they've been outlawed in America. So have you ever seen a film where a cowboy and Indian is riding at a full gallop and the horse gets shot out from under him and the horse goes ass over tea kettle into a fucking somersault? Yeah, sure. Do you know how they do that? Well, no, not really. Well, it should go without saying you can't train a horse to do that. You can practically train a Lipizzan to make you a cup of coffee, but you can't train it to do a fucking somersault. But if you're a prick motherfucking director who doesn't mind killing a horse to get a cool shot, you can make him do a somersault. You attach a metal cable to one of their front legs. Then you ride that horse hard and fast till the cable runs out. Then the horse's leg is yanked out from underneath it, and it does a fucking cartwheel. And that, in the stunt business, is called a running W. Now, like I said, they've been outlawed in America since the late 60s. But for over 40 years, we used to do that in America. And Hollywood killed a lot of motherfucking horses just to make some Hoot Gibson odor. But America's not Europe. In Europe, they don't give a fuck about the human extras. Forget about the fucking animals. After I saw the seventh running W on Red Blood, Red Skin, and the fourth horse shot dead because they broke their leg, I said, fuck this fucking country and fuck this film industry. So endeth my European movie career. For a while, anyway. That's what stopped David Carradine's artistic relationship with Ingmar Bergman during The Serpent's Egg. At first, Bergman loved David and was planning all these things that they could do together. Then Bergman killed a horse to get a shot in the movie. And I'm not talking about what you call a running W situation where they risk killing the horse. They just outright murdered a horse for a shot. Fucking despicable. I mean, really. How morally bankrupt can you get to think your fucking so-called art is worth murdering a horse? Well, that's what David Carradine told Bergman. Bergman tried selling him that. I'm doing it for artistic reasons justification. Supposedly David screamed at him, what's more artistic than a live horse? Good for David. Motherfuck that Swedish prick. So your last film was the third Fireman movie. Then after that, you retired. Yeah, I'd been working for a while by that time. I had two hit TV shows, Bounty Law, and my Australian series, Dingo Dan. A couple of hit movies, McCluskey and Grizzly. That's right. And by the way, for people who don't know, until John Carpenter's Halloween, Grizzly was the highest grossing independent film of the 70s. That is true. Then I had a massive success with a film I directed and starred in called The Fireman. Genuine late in life success. And after doing 10 years of guest shots in other people's series, it made me an action film leading man again, especially in Italy and the Philippines. And I enjoyed doing those movies. But let's face it, I got old. Flying to Manila to do a Road Warriors ripoff, or Rome to do a Rambo ripoff, or Brazil to do a Raiders ripoff, at a certain point, lost its appeal. I want to fish, ride horses, watch TV, sleep late, not watch my weight, and irritate my wife. I mean, if I was trying to fuck the girls on the crew, maybe, but I've been a happily married man for the last 30 years. Forget that. Well, let's talk about The Fireman. In 1980, when it came out, I saw that the day it opened in Los Angeles. A lot of people did. We had one of the biggest openings that weekend all across the country. We didn't open everywhere all at once, like they do now. Back then, Afghan Embassy would take the film and open it up in L.A. and New York and New Jersey. Then San Francisco and Oakland. Then Chicago and Detroit. Then just march their way through the U.S. Now, we figured if we were going to do any good at all, it would be in the big cities and with the blacks. But the big surprise for Avco and myself was how well the film did on the Southern drive-in circuit. We thought they might be too law and order oriented. But what we didn't account for was they got a hell of a lot of blacks in the South, too. And they go to movies, too. But also the subject of police brutality and the cops taking advantage of the poor resonated not just in New York, but everywhere. Well, let's talk about those five movies you did on your Canon picture contract. That was a damn good deal. They bought the rights for two sequels to The Fireman, which Cliff Booth directed, and three other films on their slate. A big budget film, at least for them, with Brooke Shields called Sahara, directed by Andy McLaughlin, which was amusing because in the late 60s and early 70s, all I ever wanted to do was an Andy McLaughlin picture. Him and Burt Kennedy were the only dudes left doing straight westerns. Then I couldn't get in the same room with him. But after all those years with that Brooke Shields picture, I finally made it. I joked with him, you know, instead of casting Andy Prine five fucking times, you gotta cast me once. Forget about Glenn Colbert. I can't win a personality contest against Glenn fucking Colbert. Andy laughed and said, well, that's the least of the mistakes I made. Then they sent me to Peru to do a Raiders ripoff with Antonio Margariti, my second film with him, which was released on video as Jungle Raiders, which had Lee Van Cleef in it, but I was the lead. In Italy, that's like starring in an American movie and Burt Lancaster is your guest star. And the last film I did on the contract was a guest star cameo as a crooked fight promoter in the Leon Isaac Kennedy's remake of Body and Soul, which was fun, that movie. I liked it too. Obviously, it's no competition to the original, but it's a fun little picture in its own right. I agree. It's charming. It has a good pace. It's over before you know it. And by the time it's finished, you realize you've enjoyed yourself. Well, the director was an editor. Besides, Jane Kennedy was so fucking lovely, and she was Jim's girlfriend in The Fireman. I would have practically done anything for her. And her husband, Leon, was a good cat. I was happy to back up his bid for action star status. And frankly, being in a movie with Muhammad Ali was thrilling. So anywho, with the money I made on the original Fireman movie and all the money I made on the foreign products I did afterwards and the Canon contract, me and Francesca had a nice little bird's nest finally. Also, because of my success with The Fireman, my guest star rate on television reached the top of the scale. So when I did Airwolf and The Fall Guy and Matt Houston, I was paid top dollar. In the 60s, that was the Robert Culp rate. In the 70s, that was the Darren McGavin rate. In the 80s, that was the David Carradine rate. By the end of my television career, after The Fireman, that was a Rick Dalton rate. Anyway, after I did the third Fireman movie, I thought it was a good time to wrap things up. Third one wasn't that great. Kind of ran it into the ground. But me and Cliff and Fred Williamson and Bill Smith had a fun time making it. I agree, the gas had kind of run out of the series by then. Also, the Fireman taking on the CIA wasn't as much fun as him taking on the NYPD or the Texas cops. But the scene where Monty Markham and William Smith torture you was one of the best scenes in the series. I agree. The first sequel was the better movie, but that scene, the torture scene, is the best scene that Cliff ever directed. It was also one of the best scenes I did in the 80s. So after my Canon contract was fulfilled, me and Franny decided we'd had enough money and it was time to take it easy. So we bought a nice place in Hawaii and pretty damn happy ever since. You go to autograph shows though, right? Yeah, but not so much for the money, though it doesn't hurt. But, you know, it's fun to catch up with old friends. David Carradine, Bruce Dern, James Drury, Fred Williamson, Joe Don. That's always fun. But meeting the fans, too. You see, you go to these things, and everybody's an old-timer. The stars, the fans, we have a bond built by time, by an investment of time. We spent years investing time making stuff, and they invested time watching it and remembering it. They appreciated the time we invested entertaining them, and we appreciated the time they invested watching it. When it comes to 40 years making movies and television, in some ways it's like you're making a deposit in the public consciousness by entertaining people. You do a good show that people remember fondly, you're making a deposit in public goodwill. And at these autograph shows, it's like I'm cashing in on that deposit. That goodwill. The way they talk to you. They tell you nice things about the past that they have you sign. The Bounty Law lunchbox is a big one. The Bounty Law board game. The Bounty Law comic book, the Bounty Law Mad magazine, my TV guide covers, the 14th Fist of McCluskey soundtrack, the Comanche Uprising one sheet. Somebody showed up with a fucking Dingo Dan Viewmaster. I didn't even know they made a fucking Viewmaster of Dingo Dan. These shows allow me to make withdrawals on that goodwill, one individual at a time. Last question. Would you ever act again? Maybe. If a certain somebody I know wanted me to play John Travolta's father. And that is it for my Q&A with Rick Dalton, conducted in 1999 at the Hawaii International Film Festival.
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green.
Okay, are we going to do awards?
We do. I just have one quick question.
Shoot.
One quick question. So I noticed Sabatino Quifini credited on Nebraska Jim, and I wasn't aware of him until Sonny and Jed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's a reason why I like both films. And I think it might be, but he's only like story by. Is that normal for in Italy? Because Carbucci does a lot of writing himself.
Well, he does a lot of writing. No, but there usually is an army. There usually is an army on his. Okay, so.
Time for awards.
Time for awards. Okay, so I'm assuming Rick wins best
Rick.
I don't know about that.
Rick.
Okay,
that's a joke.
Okay, but which one would he
Yeah, that's really the question.
Yeah, that's the question.
That's really the question, is which one is he winning for?
Okay, well, can you, I mean, that's hard. Yeah,
that's a tough, this is actually, that's almost, actually going to be tough.
I can almost, I can almost predict, I'm almost copying what I think Gala's going to say. I mean, because, like, well, if you're talking about acting, I guess it would probably be Marshall of Madrid.
In my opinion, okay, I think his best performance is Marshall of Madrid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he gives a really compelling performance. You fall into the character with him, because I think he does a really great job in all of these. I think Operation Nam might be my least favorite of his performances here. He plays a straight man in Manhunter. Mm-hmm. He's really fun in Jungle Raiders, but I think it's the Marshall of Madrid for me.
The Cade.
It's a weird kind of look for when it comes to acting performance. Obviously, it's Marshall of Madrid, but at the same time, the leading man quality in both Jungle Raiders and Blast Fighter is really, really strong.
And, I mean, like, and he's doing comedy. Doing comedy in Jungle Raiders.
And he's not doing comedy in Blast Fighter. He's being really strong, and I can't imagine the movie without him.
No, he's like boiling over in Blast Fighter.
Yeah, he's like fucking Kurt Douglas, right? You know, in Blast Fighter, which is who he's being from Last Turn in the Gun Hill. You can't imagine the movie would be nothing without him.
Yeah.
It would be nothing without him.
Well, it's funny. Manhunter was the movie that actually made me choke up.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
I'm not so sure that it was Rick doing that to me. It was just really, I think
it was the dictates of the role.
Yeah, exactly. The thing about the Marshal of Madrid, he's really carrying that whole thing. And he's not with Glenn Ford most of the time. It's all him. It's him and Leif Garrett. And he's acting against a kid.
Yeah.
And he's making Leif Garrett look fucking fantastic.
Well, look, the answer is obviously the Marshal of Madrid. I think I'm going to pick Blast Fighter simply because I think that's the best Rick Dalton vehicle.
I was about to say, as much as I love Marshal of Madrid.
I didn't mean to.
No. It's okay. It's just that he's so good in that and he is great in it. But I just love Jungle Raiders. I think he's really funny. I think it's just like he's having fun with it. He's selling it.
I've got no problem with those three roles being the...
I was going to say, this is like one case where I'm actually okay that we're disagreeing on best performance.
No, this happens every once in a while. I like it when we have three lead guys, all right? Yeah. Three good lead actors, and they all kind of get their vote.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not so sure I like him as much as some of the other guys in Operation Nam.
Yeah.
But I love him in Jungle Raiders.
Well, okay.
I love him in Blast Fighter.
I will argue for Operation Nam for the idea that, like, he's the solid presence that holds the film together. He doesn't have the fireworks
he's
that the other guys.
He's not showboating. There's no showboating.
No, he's the
anchor.
He's the commanding officer.
Yeah.
Well, that's like in Manhunter. It's like he's not showboating. He has to play the straight guy.
Yeah. Okay, so best actress.
Well...
It's definitely not Maria Costa or Valerie Blake.
Apologies to both of them.
Linda Cristal in Marshall of Madrid.
Marshall of Madrid. Even though I don't think you could... Stephanie Powers has so little to do. You can't call her a supporting actress, can you? She's a supporting actress. Yeah.
I like how on the cover of the box, they've got a more recent version of Stephanie Powers than she was in the show. Like, she seems younger and trimmer in the in it. And then on the poster, they've got a kind of later stage Stephanie Powers.
Well, if Stephanie Powers isn't... is it lead actress? And there is not a lead actress for me.
Well, no, it's the...
But I don't want to vote for her. Linda Cristal.
What was the Latin actress's name?
Linda Cristal.
Is that Linda Cristal?
That's Linda Cristal.
Then I'm going to go with Linda Cristal.
Okay.
I think she does constitute lead because I think...
Who you mean?
Stephanie Powers.
Because the supporting lead actress would be the love interest.
I would agree. Okay. Well, then Stephanie Powers all the way.
Okay.
In fact, she doesn't have enough to do as far as I'm concerned. That's one of the biggest problems with Manhunter. One, that script is a good script. That could be a movie made tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Like
absolutely.
A feature film at the movie theaters. you just need better violent scenes when it comes out, and you need more time with Frank and Anna Louise.
More Gary Lockwood.
Yeah, Gary Lockwood. More Gary Lockwood. More Stephanie Powers.
And definitely more James Olsen.
I think he's actually the right amount. Yeah, yeah.
The ingredients are perfect with him.
The ingredients are perfect for him. Okay, best actor, best actress. Is there a supporting actress? The chick that shoots Ethan Wayne.
Well, actually, yeah.
I love that girl. I thought she was fantastic.
That's the Full Metal Jacket moment.
Yeah, the Full Metal Jacket.
And then also the sweetheart in Manhunter.
And the sister who's the bad girl in The Fury.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Actually, I like that sister.
I
love her in The Fury.
And Margaret Markov, White Mama from Black Mama, White Mama, yeah. Who is in the second half of The Marshal of Madrid. This was the best scene in that whole movie was Margaret Markov.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely Margaret Markov wins Best Supporting Actress for me.
You
absolutely.
Just love her.
Because she's great. I have a reason to love her. She's fantastic.
I know.
All right.
Who are you going to go for, Dad, for Best Supporting?
I'm going to follow Quentin with Margaret.
All right. She deserves
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, Gala.
No, because I'm going to go there too. Oh,
okay. All right.
We're all in
Margaret.
Yeah.
Maggie.
Okay, best supporting actor.
Okay, well, it comes.
Tougher, but not tough for me. I'm going James Olsen all the way.
Okay.
James Olsen in Manhunter as second fiddle, who is just burning alive at the indignities that are thrown at
him
constantly.
The way he institutes his minions! Minions!
He's great in this. Jin Fizz is really good. Also.
Jin Fizz is terrific in Jungle Raiders. He's great.
and then, of course, Tiger.
Our talking about Tiger almost moved me into the idea of him over James Olsen. All right. The Tiger's just amazing. He's great. Okay. So with the caveat, the Tiger is great. He would be my second choice. Even when you have a movie with Gary Lockwood, and my one of my favorite eras of Gary Lockwood, where he's kind of seedy.
Yeah.
And he's terrific in this role.
Yeah.
James Olsen still fucking wins.
Yeah.
He's terrific. He's terrific in it.
Okay, I'm going to throw out an award for Best Child. Because
it's Snake Boy.
But we have Snake Boy. We have Leigh Garrett.
Yeah.
We have his daughter in Blast Fighter, which I'm not really sure
she's
going to
win. No, she's not winning.
She's definitely not winning.
I'm going to go with Snake Boy.
By comparison, I like her.
I just want Snake Boy to get an award.
Snake Boy's getting an award.
Cobra Boy.
But only if it's given to the snake as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, Cobra Boy. Okay.
They go, it's a team effort. Yeah,
but did you
two.
Pick a Best Supporting Actor?
Oh, I agree with that.
Okay.
And by the way, just so everybody knows.
Say it out loud. James Olsen. Right?
James Olsen wins the award.
And the thing about Snake Boy is this is like a little kid, and he's actually got a freaking cobra. In his basket.
No, it does not look.
He's kissing it.
Does not look like they found a little boy and taught him how to interact with this cobra. They found a cobra boy.
Yeah.
found a cobra. This is that cobra is that kid's fucking snake.
And it's his livelihood, probably.
Yeah.
And the cobra is pivotal to not only the plot, but the story.
Yeah. Absolutely. That cobra is amazing. Yeah. I mean, it absolutely. And the execution of the cobra is right up there with the execution of some of the hand shit in Demonoid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Best screenplay.
Ooh.
And that's actually kind of, they're all pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
For best screenplay, I'm going to go with Operation Nam. Because think the ending, like how it
subverts
my expectations of what's going to happen. I think was
like in a way in a mind blowing way.
And Jungle Raiders, it has that really fantastic opening, like 20 minutes. That was amazing. But I'm going to give it to Operation Nam.
Okay.
Despite my love for
Jungle
I'm going
to give it to Manhunter. I was going back and forth between Marshal of Madrid and Manhunter because Marshal of Madrid has, a lot of it is dialogue between Rick and Leif Garrett.
Yeah.
And so it's almost Leif Garrett's doing a great job, but it's Rick.
Yeah, it's Rick.
And he's
doing a great job.
He's got all this great material to work with, and he's elevating it. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think I'm going to go with Manhunter just because I feel like it's so tight. Like you said, that script could easily just add a little bit more money and
a little more blood,
a little bit more Tommy Gun action.
Yeah, a little bit more Tommy Gun and.
I'm going to go with Blast Fighter. I actually think Blast Fighter, I think Lombard Dubrava does a good job with Blast Fighter, but I think they ran out of gas somewhere towards the end. But I don't think the script necessarily runs out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
I could almost put Blast Fighter in the same category as Manhunters. I could see a more legit version mm-hmm. of the same material done.
Yeah, take that exact same script. Frankly, you could take the script of any, like, yeah, I think the script for Jungle Raiders is as good. I mean, I love Bob Gale. I love Bob Zemeckis. Mm-hmm. I think Jungle Raiders might be a better script than Romancing the Stone.
It might be. Like, Jungle Raiders might be. It might be. Okay, you know what? I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to go with Jungle Raiders, because Jungle Raiders...
Yeah, I just talked myself into Jungle Raiders,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, Jungle Raiders is not what it could be. Jungle Raiders is what it is.
Yeah, and... yeah.
I was expecting to be catty of seeing a this era... Antonio Margheriti film. I think it's one of the best movies he ever made. I think it's really, really well done. And the action scenes, I mean, he pulls them off to a fairly well. I mean, and I will point at his seams normally, but that's not the case here.
Yeah.
Best director?
Best director. Okay, I'm starting off. I'm going with Dick Donner. Big Dick Donner.
Big Dick Donner. Big Dick Donner.
And for The Marshal of Madrid. I just think that opening sequence is fantastic.
Well, if we're talking about best scene, for sure, it would be the opening scene of Marshal of Madrid. All right.
And also, he's juggling Glenn Ford and Rick.
I'm really surprised, because I wanted to pick a couple of things that I hadn't seen. And so I hadn't really seen Operation NAMM since I watched it in Imperial Entertainment. But I remember liking it well enough. But I hadn't seen Jungle Raiders. So I'm really, really impressed with the five movies that we watched. They're all... pretty well directed. I think I'm going to go with Antonio Margheriti. I'm proud to go with Antonio Margheriti.
I got no problem with that, because I think what Margheriti does with blending the models and blending the action, I mean, it's his trademark, and that it's a fun comedy, and that he's taking these other movies, Romancing the Stone and Raiders of the Lost Ark, and doing kind of a little bit of a mashup, and then his own original bouillabaisse of two films.
I mean, the fact that it can be a Romancing the Stone ripoff and have such a terrible Kathleen Turner character. I mean, just like, it doesn't even count. Okay, she's so bad, it doesn't even count.
She doesn't exist in my brain.
Yeah, and it still works pretty much 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have to go with Margheriti for all the reasons that Roger just mentioned. I know he's not picking the film, but well, I am.
I still love... I mean, I know that everybody here is working under very tight budgetary constraints, but Donner is basically doing a TV episode.
Yeah.
And he's
two TV
just
episodes.
Two TV... Well, but the one with Rick. And
it's a one.
Yeah.
If we're honest. Yeah. Though it's a movie, it's two TV episodes.
We watched both of them. We watched the whole thing.
Yeah. And Donner did both.
Yeah.
But I just think that he's so deft with efficiency and knocking it out and doing all sorts of great stuff, and also doing a really good little character piece and giving Rick a real good, juicy role to, you know, sink his teeth into.
No, I would definitely say make these statements and they're like slightly contradicting him. I was just getting ready to say that, like, probably the director that serves Rick best is Richard Donner. Well, yes, but it's a fucking Margheriti serves him, man.
Yeah, and he does something that
John M. Old Jr. serves him.
Larry Ludman. Best Box.
Oh, Best Box.
Yes, this is important. And I'm just going to jump right in and just say
Jungle Raiders.
No question. You cannot beat MGMUA at the peak.
Okay, here's my next question, though. Best transfer.
Well, it's definitely not...
That's definitely not Marshal of Madrid. You're
Marshal of Madrid.
I'm going to guess Jungle Raiders. Because it was MGM. All right. The Manhunter one was okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're all okay. Jungle
they were,
Raiders.
I think they were all Jungle Raiders. Yeah, I mean, I would say Jungle Raiders.
I agree.
Okay, so Best Picture Gala.
Captain Yankee, duh. I mean, I'm going to be thinking about Snake Cobra Boy and, like, Cobra Boy's story, and also just, like, all the awesome miniatures, and when they have that truck with the flamethrower and they're driving through, just, like, the destruction and Tiger's laugh and just all the fun twists. And yeah, exactly. I'm going to be having that, like, I close my eyes at night and I hear Quentin doing Tiger's laugh. But I'm going to have all the fun twists and turns in my head. And it was just a movie. And I think this is one that I would go back to and watch again.
Yeah, I would watch Jungle Raiders again, too. I've been talking myself into Jungle Raiders for the last four awards. I'm going now back, though, to actually Operation Now. I think at the end, when we watched all the movies, the one that held from beginning to end, that to me, that stayed in my mind the most was Operation Nam as a movie. Because I just remember like, wow, that was a really good little combat picture. And I liked how fucking cynical it was. And the last 15 minutes is just like one bomb after another narratively is dropped.
Yeah, it's a powerful film. And it definitely has more to say than Jungle Raiders.
But that's not even against it.
No, I don't mean that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean like,
but it does have something to say.
It's like a powerful film. It's got something to say. It's like,
and it says it.
And it says it.
Yeah. It's a very Avery message.
Yeah. I have to say my expectations were so low on Jungle Raiders. Like just because I'm like, oh God, it's Margheriti. We're going to watch another one of these like thing. It's going to be just a bunch of slop thrown up on screen. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. And then I watch it. And I'm like, wait, hold on a sec. This is great. This is better than like the big Hollywood movies that it's inspired by. And it's lovingly inspired by them. Yes. And it's doing like, it's doing great things. And it's, and Rick is great in it. It's got Cobra Boy. He doesn't pick up the flamethrower. And I kept saying, when is he going to pick up the flamethrower? Mm-hmm. And that almost became like a running joke.
It became a joke. It was a joke. We kept talking about it.
So I had a great time with it. I mean, all of these are great movies. I could easily also, to be perfectly honest, talk myself into Blast Fighter because you know how much I love Deliverance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this gave me
everything. No, it was a loving tribute to Deliverance.
It's an absolute, it's like, let's go climb inside the skin of Deliverance and walk around a little.
No, I mean, to such a degree, it's like, why didn't we think to just go to the same town that they shot Deliverance and do our own little thing?
It's great. Yeah. And get all, and shoot at the same locations with the same actors, actors.
So you're
I'm going with Jungle Raiders, even though actually was surprised how much I really liked Blast Fighter and Operation Nam. Mm-hmm. And they're all very, you know, fun movies. But I just think Jungle Raiders was just such a surprise to me.
It was a surprise.
And I just love all the model work. Like it has charm. It has charm.
It definitely has.
And it takes an Italian filmmaker to have a scene where the venomous snake that's killing all the villains slithers off in the end with the female snake.
Yeah.
And you have a fulfilling love story.
Well, it's actually a very William Whitney moment because he's like very much goes off of the animals and they have their own little story.
Well, then it's let's call it a Rick Dalton moment. Then.
Okay. Okay. Last thing I will say is Operation Nam to me was also very charming in its cynicalness.
Yeah. That ending is just super powerful.
And also, I just want to give a shout out to Manhunter because it actually made me want to watch the TV show.
It makes me want to watch the TV show, too. Yeah. Good luck.
Speaking of the ending of Operation Nam, I'm just a little curious. Do you think that dark ending was added? Like, have you ever seen the original script for it?
No, but
like,
I would,
do you think Rick signed on for a movie that has basically a happy ending and then they added that
his part wouldn't be a happy ending, but there's a coda attached to the actual end.
Yeah.
That is even more cynical than the way the script ended. It took it even darker.
Yeah.
It took it to an even darker place than I think the final page of the script was.
Okay, that's
I think it ends with him in the helicopter being all disillusioned.
Yeah.
All right. And proving to himself that no, he doesn't have it.
And then they double down in the editing room.
And then they double down on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was, I think, that ended up being a really good Rick Dalton tribute episode. I want to thank both Gala and Roger for joining me in this endeavor. This was a lot of fun watching this. It was great thinking about my old pal and reading my Q&A. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode. I'm Quentin Tarantino.
I'm Roger Avery.
And I'm Gala Avery.
And we'll see you next time on the Video Archives Podcast.
Rest in peace, Rick Dalton.
The Video Archives Podcast is hosted by Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery and produced by Josh Richmond and Gala Avery, with executive producers Colin Anderson and Natalie Muallam. Our engineers are Alex Gonzalez and Casey Holford. Find out more about the show and get Video Archives merch at videoarchivespodcast.com. You can also find us on Twitter @VideoArchives and on Instagram @VideoArchivesPod.